Hey guys, welcome back to the show. I'm really excited to bring today's episode to you because this is a very real and raw and honest conversation all about maternal mental health with an amazing guest, Gabrielle Moskowitz. And I'll tell you before I even explain a little bit about her and who she is, the reason that I wanted to do an episode on maternal mental health was actually because I've had so many women reaching out to me in the past year. Not really struggling to get pregnant or with any kind of like diagnosed hormone issue like PCOS or regular periods, but I've just had a lot of moms reaching out to me saying, listen, you know, I was pregnant once or twice in the past couple of years. I have like one, two, or three little kids, and I just feel like I'm drowning in motherhood. And it's not to say that these women don't love being moms, and I totally relate to this. Being a mom is the best thing in the entire world. Like my dream, my whole life has literally been to be a mom, and it is the most amazing thing. And I love my kids more than anything. And also it's really, really hard. And I feel like today it's harder than ever because there are so many demands on women. There is so much pressure on us to show up in the best way for our kids, for our husbands, for ourselves. There's also just so much information out there now. So while it can be, you know, sometimes really helpful to go on Instagram or read parenting books and get all this advice about motherhood, it can also be extremely overwhelming, and it can kind of just feel like, wow, I'm never doing enough. I'm never good enough. And I think that there's just been really a mental health crisis amongst moms. And one way that I love to support my clients is by really showing them that when you take care of yourself with really healthy food and you're eating regularly and you're not just eating the scraps of your kids' meals, like not just eating the crust of the bread that your kids don't eat and half a cucumber that your baby threw off the high chair, but really taking the time and space to take care of yourself is transformative, not just for who you are and how you show up as a mother, but who you are and how you show up in your own life and in your own identity outside of being a mother. And that's why I was really excited to do this episode. And my guest today, Gabrielle Moskowitz, is the perfect person to have this conversation with because Gabrielle Moskowitz is a therapist. She's actually a therapist at Collaborative Mind Psychotherapy in New Jersey, and she specializes in maternal mental health. She is really passionate about advocating for women's mental health access with issues such as infertility, pregnancy loss, postpartum anxiety and depression, and struggles with motherhood. Gabrielle is currently pursuing a perinatal mental health certification through the PSI, and you can follow her along at The Chef Therapist on Instagram for lots of tips, resources, and personal stories all about maternal mental health and mental health in general. And I also have to shout out my sister-in-law, Paula, here, because the reason that I actually know Gabrielle is through my sister-in-law. We basically share a sister-in-law. So my brother is married to my sister-in-law, Paula, and Paula's brother is married to Gabrielle. So even though we've actually, I think, only met once in person at their wedding, I followed her on Instagram just because I was like, oh, the chef therapist, that's cute. I like that name and I know her. But I loved the content she was sharing. I found it really relatable, really practical. She gives just really good advice on how you can create pockets of space for self-care and motherhood. And we get really raw and honest in this conversation about the real struggles that come up, especially around fertility. So in this conversation, you're going to hear Gabrielle share her own experience with postpartum depression after pregnancy loss. This is not something that I've heard a lot of people talk so openly about. I thought it was just so important. We also talk a lot about postpartum depression, postpartum anxiety. I share my experience with prenatal depression and anxiety. We talked about the mental health crisis that moms are facing right now, how social media is playing a role in this. Gabrielle gives a lot of practical tips and strategies for improving your mental health and motherhood. We even talked about having conversations with your husband that can help support your mental health and motherhood. We talk about the role of medication in mental health and so much more. I really felt like this conversation covered so many different topics. I think it's going to be really helpful for a lot of people, first and foremost, just to recognize that they're not alone in any of these struggles, but also to give you some really great practical takeaways that will hopefully help you support your mental health during motherhood. So I am so excited to share this episode with you, and let's dive in and hear from Gabrielle. Welcome to the About Health and Hormones podcast. I'm your host, Lauren Allen, a recovered sugar addict turned certified nutrition coach on a mission to help women learn how to balance their hormones and optimize their fertility. On this podcast, we have conversations with experts about all things health, hormones, wellness, nutrition, and more. to give you the information, tips, and tricks you need to take control of your health and feel amazing in your body. I am so happy that you're here and I can't wait to dive in. Hi, Gabrielle. Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me, Lauren.
I was just telling you, I'm so excited to have this conversation because I think it's so important. It's so needed. And I think that moms are really struggling with their mental health, which I know you're an expert in. So we're going to get into. But before we get into that, can you just tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you started working in the mental health field?
Sure. So I'm Gabrielle and I'm a therapist at Collaborative Mind Psychotherapy. We're located in Teaneck, New Jersey, and our practice primarily deals with actually teens and adolescents, but my specialty is maternal mental health. And so the reason that I'm super passionate about helping women is obviously for personal reasons. I'm a mom of three little kids, and I know the struggles that, you know, are a part of just being a mom in terms of like juggling your careers and your house and just raising the kids and being a good spouse and all the things that come along with being a good mom. And I agree with you, Lauren, there's definitely a crisis going on with maternal mental health. The statistics are staggering. Basically, 1 in 5 women are diagnosed with like a perinatal mood or anxiety disorder. And it's usually underreported because this is like people reporting it. And actually 1 in 10 dads are also diagnosed with it. So I think that's a statistic to just keep in mind that it's not only something that affects moms, it can affect dads as well.
No, I really appreciate you pointing that out. And yeah, I want to start with getting into it because I know that for a lot of people, it starts as early as in pregnancy. And I don't think I've shared so much on the podcast. I definitely shared about it with my audience on Instagram that I had really difficult pregnancies. I self-diagnosed myself with having, I don't know if the right term is like prenatal depression or anxiety or perinatal depression or anxiety, but I didn't know until like the end of my pregnancy. I just thought I was really bad at being pregnant. And then I had been speaking to a mentor of mine who was like, oh, you know, some people have this, like if you really don't feel like yourself in pregnancy, it could really be related to the hormones. And I was like, what? Like nobody had told me that. And I was really struggling. And I had it again in the second pregnancy, but I recognized it right away, which at least allowed me to go. I got professional help right away. I told my friends, I was able to get a lot more support and that really changed my experience. But can we start there with talking about mental health during pregnancy?
Absolutely. So what you're going through is completely normal. It's again, when I talk about like 1 in 5 women, that statistic, that's anywhere from being pregnant to a year following postpartum. So the perinatal anxiety and depression, it definitely occurs in pregnancies. I mean, especially I want to just talk a little bit about people who have experienced like some sort of trauma when getting pregnant or any kind of pregnancy loss, things like that. So something that was really eye-opening for me is that, and I share with my followers as well, I personally experienced 2 pregnancy losses, one at 8 weeks and one at 9 weeks. And the one at 9 weeks, I was super depressed. It was hard for me to sleep. It was hard for me to eat. I would be at work and like somebody would say something super random and it would just like, I would burst into tears. And I remember thinking like, what's wrong with me? Like what is going on? When I sought help as well, I had this realization and I was told that, you know, these mood disorders and anxiety disorders also incur in pregnancy loss as well. So your hormones are changing. And even if your body doesn't keep the pregnancy necessarily, these mood disorders can still occur. So for me, that was like super eye-opening. And I just felt like, wow, like this is something that I feel like is not spoken about and women don't know about. And so for me, it was really helpful to sort of name that and like get the support that I needed and not feel like there was something necessarily wrong with me. It was more just like the hormones in your body, like re-regulating itself.
Yes. I remember we actually spoke about this initially when we were chatting about this whole subject. And I said, wow, it's so true. I haven't heard a lot of people talk specifically about that kind of postpartum depression that happens after a loss or a miscarriage. And I feel like it must be hard to also figure out if someone is just feeling sad that they miscarried, which is, of course, a normal, natural feeling versus depression. And can you tell us also, like, what's the difference? Because I think for some people, they struggle with knowing maybe when and where to seek professional help and when it's kind of just like, okay, I need to process these difficult feelings.
That's a really great, great question. I think that, of course, it's normal to be sad and grieve at following a loss, or even I see it with my clients that are going through fertility treatments. They're sort of grieving the way in which they thought their family would come about. So like I have a client right now and she's in the IVF process and she was talking to me about, you know, grieving that sense of like making a baby in a natural way and having to resort to, you know, fertility treatments. She's going through male factor infertility. So, you know, it just has to be done through IVF. And so there are signs that you can look out for in order to kind of differentiate whether you're sort of having the, like, in quotes, regular grief and sadness, or if it's something more like disruptive. And so something that's helpful is to think about, is it impacting your daily functioning? So is it impacting your sleep? Is it impacting your eating habits? Do you have a normal appetite? Are you not eating? Are you eating too much? Are you having like constant racing thoughts? And some people also experience physical symptoms. So whether that's like nausea, dizziness, heart racing, things like that to look out for. Another big one to look out for is like thoughts of harming yourself or someone else. And sometimes that can happen. And obviously that's not part of like the normal grieving process. Also, people go through like these feelings of irritability and anger. And it's more than just like, I'm angry that my pregnancy was taken away. It's more this like rage, and it comes sort of out of nowhere. So looking at that and trying to find the symptoms of like, is this affecting my daily functioning? Am I getting up in the morning and am I able to go to work? Am I able to eat the three meals I normally eat, or am I unable to do so? And so I think the point of differentiation is when it really can affect your daily functioning and you're not able to do things that you were previously able to do in a normal way.
Okay, that's definitely a helpful distinction, and I hope helpful for people listening. And before we move into specifically talking about like postpartum depression and then mental health during motherhood, because that's like a whole separate topic, can we just talk a little bit about seeking help in general? Because I feel like, I don't know if you feel this way, I remember when I was a teenager and I definitely had some struggles around anxiety, I did not tell a soul in the world that I was going to therapy, like not even my best friends, because that was like not something even, what was this, like, I don't know, 10 years ago, that people talked about so openly. But I feel like now that's really shifted. People are like, oh yeah, I'm going to like call my mom, I'm going to my therapist, I'm getting my eyebrows done. It's like just another appointment that people have, which in some ways I think is good. And people have become more open about. But where do you think people can benefit from seeking treatment? Like, is it if it falls into that category of it's kind of affecting your daily life, or can, you know, someone who's just having run-of-the-mill sadness or stress around motherhood, can they also benefit from going to therapy?
Absolutely. I'm a believer that therapy, everybody should be in therapy. And it's like what you were saying. And I actually had a similar experience. I remember going to therapy and it's a senior in high school. And like, I was in the waiting room and I saw somebody from my school who was seeing my same therapist. And I was mortified. I'm like, I can't see her. And now I would have been like, oh my God, hey, what's up? So I think that everyone can benefit from therapy. Therapy is a way to, it's part of self-care, and that's something that I'm a huge believer in. And it's basically prioritizing yourself. When people think of self-care, they think of like taking a bath or listening to music, and all that stuff is great. But it's, to me, real self-care is like prioritizing yourself. And I feel that prioritizing your mental health and, you know, scheduling your therapy is a great way to do that. And so you don't have to be in like a crisis mode in order to gain benefits from therapy. There's so many benefits that you can gain, and we're supposed to be like a third party perspective on your life. And so we show you new ways to think about things, and we give you guidance and help you reach your utmost potential. So like, why not try it for everyone, right?
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And shifting gears a little bit to talk about postpartum depression, because I think, you know, even for someone who didn't necessarily experience postpartum depression after loss, like people can really understand that. I think postpartum depression, while it's gotten a lot more attention recently and people are more open about it, I think a lot of people still don't really understand it. Like, you just had a baby, you know, nothing bad happened. Why are you feeling this way? Why don't you feel like yourself? So can you tell us maybe a little bit about how, like, you've seen it show up in your patients, or just a little bit more about what it even is?
Yeah. So sometimes postpartum depression occurs because there was a traumatic event either in the pregnancy itself or in the birthing process. So in my own experience and just working with clients, a lot of people that go through C-sections have a higher rate of postpartum depression.
Oh, that's so interesting.
My second son was actually an unexpected C-section. While I didn't have postpartum depression, I definitely struggled with postpartum anxiety. And I think for sure is related to, like, the traumatic way that he was brought into this world. And so that's, like, an interesting thing to keep in mind. And some of my clients who have gone through infertility as well, the postpartum depression is higher rates because they're like, wow, I've been waiting so long for this baby. Like, why am I not on cloud nine? Why am I exhausted? Why am I feeling sad? And they feel guilty about it. And so it definitely, like, affects their moods. But again, postpartum depression can happen to anyone. There's definitely higher rates in people that have struggled before with mental illness. So a few of my clients going through it, like, they've either had depression before or anxiety. One of them has OCD as well. So there's, like, co-occurrences. But again, I think the way that your birth story went and the way that your pregnancy went, and if you've dealt with, you know, any sort of pregnancy complications, there's definitely, as long as I've seen, like, a higher incidence rate of postpartum depression.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I remember when I was, like, maybe 37 weeks pregnant or something with my first, I was looking up all these things about postpartum depression. I also don't know how it is in America, but here in Israel, they've gotten really, really great about within the system kind of screening for postpartum depression. So at all the appointments here, they'll ask you questions like, you know, are things safe at home? Do you feel safe? Do you laugh regularly? Like, they ask all these questions, kind of screening it and trying to figure out if you're high risk. And I was like, oh my God, I so fit the bill. I'm probably going to get it because I was having all this prenatal depression and anxiety. And I had a lot of the other risk factors. Like, I had a high risk pregnancy and I had struggled before. And I was very surprised that I basically had the baby. I ended up also having a very good birth, but I, within hours of getting the baby out of me, felt like myself again. And it, not exactly like myself pre-pregnancy, but I started to just feel like my pregnancy was so difficult and not being pregnant was so much easier for me than being pregnant that I started to feel like myself again. So I was really surprised that I didn't develop it, but I've had so many friends who had it. It's really common. And I think especially with all the stuff going on in the first couple of months, you're not sleeping, you're trying to deal with, like, feeding the baby. It can manifest in almost like robbing you of that newborn stage that some people probably also they picture that it's going to be this, like, happy cloud nine time, and then it's not, which I'm sure, like, compounds and adds to the already difficult experience.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, furthermore, like, I find that people, it's sort of that, like, you're given this baby and you're just, like, sent home from the hospital, and you're kind of, especially with your first, you're, like, expected to just take care of it, and you're like, what am I even doing? And so I think there's this, like, mentality and the way that motherhood and, like, birth is portrayed as, like, it's rainbows and butterflies, but, like, there are struggles. And even if, like, for me, for example, like, it was really hard for me to breastfeed with my first, and it just, like, wasn't working. And I remember that, like, guilt associated with that was so strong. And I find that with clients as well, like, this guilt of, like, you know, feeding your baby. And I have a client that she had a mastectomy, so she can't breastfeed. And that, for her, that's really, really hard. And I think it also contributed to her postpartum depression because she felt like she was letting her child down by not giving the child breast milk. So I think all that stuff also can contribute. And just this, just in general, this, like, enormous pressure on women to do everything and to bounce back after giving birth as well, like, especially with body stuff, that can contribute as well.
Yeah, it's true. It's a lot. There's a lot of pressure. I'm curious, just in your own opinion, I don't know if there's, like, a lot of research on this. I would imagine there's some. Do you feel like social media is contributing to this at all? Because I remember that was something specifically, like, I would be up and breastfeeding my daughter. I'm thinking, like, the early days, like, still in the hospital. And somehow Instagram literally knew that I went from being pregnant to having a baby. Like, I don't know how, it must have just been listening to me, but I was getting all these like 9 month pregnant kinds of content. And then all of a sudden I was having all this newborn content. So like the algorithm knew. And I was having so much anxiety from seeing all these posts of like, do this with your baby, do that with your baby. This is how you feed. This is the schedule. These are the apps you need. This is the stroller you need. And I was like, I can't handle this. And I actually just deleted Instagram from my phone, which I think was the best thing. And part of why I probably didn't have any kind of like mental health struggle after having the baby. But do you see that being something that's playing a role in either like adding to the pressure or affecting maternal mental health at all?
Absolutely. Again, like my clients coming in there, they tell me like, well, I saw on Instagram that like you're supposed to cluster feed. And then other clients will come in and say like, well, I saw on Instagram that like you should do 12 by 12, or I follow this influencer and she, you know, feeds every 2 hours, or the other influencer like told me to get this kind of diaper. And I'm like so overwhelmed by like the endless amount of choices. And so I do think that it definitely contributes to the anxiety in general. And I think good for you for deleting Instagram, because I remember that was super challenging for me, like seeing all these differing opinions and like, well, I don't know which person is right. Like, who should I even follow? And it was like this, you know, never ending like guessing game almost. So I really do think that it contributes. I'll do say one positive thing about social media is I do think that more people are speaking about postpartum depression and more people are posting their stories, whether it's like, you know, their infertility journey or their pregnancy loss, and it's definitely becoming less stigmatized. So I think there's two sides to the coin, but I find that part helpful for clients. And just for me in general to see that like you're not alone in certain things, but there's also that like overwhelming indecision of, do I do something this way or that way?
Yeah, for sure. I know like for me personally, a big thing that I would go back and forth with was I was breastfeeding and like kind of trying to do it on demand. And at the same time, I was like, I'm going to lose my mind if I don't sleep train this kid. And then I'd have these accounts or like things pop up about how, if, you know, you really should be on the child schedule until they're three and you're going to impact attachment style and development. And then it's not just like, what's the best diaper to get, but like, oh, am I going to ruin my child's whole attachment style? I studied psych in university. So like attachment's everything. If you don't know what attachment style it is, it's basically like how the kid bonds to the, I mean, I'm sure you could say more, but it's how the kid bonds to their caregiver, and it will affect like every relationship they have for the rest of their life. So it's a lot of pressure. And I found myself like, I'd be in the middle of the day doing random things, like thinking about these things, like, oh my God, should I sleep train? Should I not? Am I a terrible mother? Am I going to ruin my kids? It's not just like, again, it's not little decisions. It's, I think a lot of moms are worried, like, am I ruining my kids? Do you find that?
Yeah, because I think as women, we can never do right. Like there's always going to be, right? Like you're either like too, like people make fun of me that like I'm too scheduled with my kids and right. And other people are like, you're too, so other people, you're too lax with your kids in terms of like the sleep schedules and, you know, eating and that kind of thing. I think you can't really win and you just have to do what's best for you and your family. And that's like what I'm a big believer in. It's like putting you and your family first. And so if you feed your kid on demand, like, and it works for you, that's great. Like you have to be able to fit it into your schedule and make it work for you. And if you want to be on like a very strict 2-3 hour schedule and that works for you and you like the predictability and like just knowing what's coming next, that's great too. I don't think there's one right way. I think the most important thing is just to do what's best for you and your family. And so I feel like when I think about it and when I talk to my clients about it, it's almost like giving yourself permission to do what's best for you. And just knowing that like, you're not going to ruin your kid, whether you feed them every 2 hours or on demand, like you're not going to ruin them. As long as you're loving and supportive and provide that emotional validation when they're growing up, like that's the most important thing.
Yeah, I think that's what I really want to get into, like moving out of the newborn stage, which I know comes with its own challenges, like your entrance into motherhood feels like a really big deal. But then as kids are getting older, you know, the toddler years, the elementary school years, teenage years, which I'm not there right now. And I know you're not there right now, but I'm sure you speak to moms that just have kids of all ages. And I told you this before we started recording, but the main reason that I wanted to have this conversation is actually because of one of my clients was saying to me at the end of one of our sessions, we weren't talking about this at all, but she's like, Lauren, can I just ask you, like, what is going on with all the moms? And I was like, what do you mean? She's like, moms are not okay. I just feel like Every mom that I speak to is so overwhelmed that like they can't handle their life. They're not happy. So every week I have a different friend telling me she's going on anxiety medication, which is not like in and of itself a bad thing, but she's like, I don't believe they all have anxiety disorders. Side note, she's like in the mental health profession. I think she's also a therapist. And it was more just like, why does it seem like all of the moms are not okay? And I kind of just want to get into that because it was a little bit of like a wake up to me. I was like looking around at my friends and thinking about people I know. And I was like, yeah, the moms are just like not okay. And even if they're fine, they're like also not really okay. Do you know what I mean? I'm not articulating it well, but do you know what I mean?
Fine is never a good word. Fine is never good. But 100%, I do think that there's a maternal crisis going on and moms are definitely not okay. Even just my own friends and clients that I see, like, there's, again, it goes back to this like pressure that's put on women to do it all. And so like, you know, we have to have the careers and we have to be moms and we have to be a good wife and we have to be involved in the community and we have to be a good friend and we have to take care of the household. And there's all of these like never ending things on the to-do list. And so even if you finish the to-do list for the day, you know that like tomorrow it's all going to happen again. And there's just never going to be a time when there's nothing on the list. And so I think that maybe like when our parents were growing up, women were not necessarily working as much or not like really in the career field as much, but now like you're expected to do it all. And so I think that expectation of like going to work, but also having dinner ready for everybody and making the kids lunches and packing the snacks and unloading the dishwasher and doing the laundry and et cetera, et cetera. It's like, you never get a break and you're never able to prioritize yourself. And so something that I'm really passionate about and I speak to all my clients about is scheduling me time, no matter what, every single day. And that me time can look like whatever you want it to be. For me, it's like taking a walk outside. And even if I have like a client call, I'll do it like while I'm walking just so I can at least get some fresh air. Some people like to do, I practice yoga 3 times a week. I like Pilates. Like there are all these different things that you can do, but just to make sure, even if you schedule 10 minutes to just drink your coffee by yourself without a phone, without the kids running and jumping all over you, without thinking about the never ending to-do list, like that is something that I recommend to all my clients and all my friends, because when we don't prioritize ourselves, we can't be the best mom. And something that my own therapist said like a couple of years back that really stuck with me was like, you know, on the airplane, they say like, you have to put on your own oxygen mask before you put on others. So that's mm-hmm. the thing I try to live by, because if we're not prioritizing ourselves as moms and as individuals, we can't be there for our families and we can't be the best possible mom we can be. You need to be able to have time for yourself and to like reflect and take a pause on all of this never ending list in order to be the best version of yourself.
Okay. So I really relate to that, the never ending list. Also, as someone who runs their own business, like I think entrepreneurs, no matter what their gender is, or if they have kids or not, they also have like their never ending to-do list of business. And then as the mom, there's like also that never ending to-do list. I always say this, and like I plan out people's meals and dinners for a living, but I get to my own family, I'm like, oh my God, we have to have dinner every single night. Like even if I manage it and I get the best dinner on the table tonight, like I have to do it again tomorrow. And I know that it happens to be my mom was for most of my life a working mom, but when we were really little, she wasn't working and she had help. And like, I think there's also a really big distinction that people feel now of like, moms who have additional help versus those who don't. But how do you suggest that people who are like, I'm really stuck in the to-do list, like, you don't understand, I can't take those 10 minutes for myself because then who's making the dinner or doing the laundry or doing all the things that I'm already shuttling between carpools and picking the kids up and like all the errands? What advice can you give to those moms who feel like I'm just too overwhelmed to take that time for myself even?
So first of all, ask for help. And whether that's asking your spouse and being really direct, so that I know, like with my own husband, like I have to say like, Jacob, I need you to do X task. And he's like, okay, no problem. But if I go about and if I'm like, oh my God, I'm so overwhelmed, like you never do anything, I'm doing everything, like that doesn't translate well. So I think what I tell clients to do is directly ask for help, whether that's asking your spouse, asking if your parents live nearby, a cousin, a friend, like, can you come over? Or also prioritizing the to-do list. So like I like to tell clients, like, you can write down your to-do list and you can categorize it into two categories, like can do and must do. So what must get done versus what can be done or what can be pushed off to like the following day or the following week. Another thing that's really helpful is to like meal prep, honestly. Personally, I do some of that on like Sundays where I take like a few hours and I just kind of prep things for the week, or I have like, I pre-chop like vegetables or things like that so I can quickly like throw them in the oven. And so things like that, and just understanding that 10 minutes like doesn't, like it might feel like a lot, but if you pause for 10 minutes, like your whole day won't derail. Like I'm not telling you to pause for an hour and a half. I'm telling you those little 10 minutes. And even though it doesn't feel like a lot, it will like translate into just like noticing your own self and your own needs and prioritizing those. So again, I would recommend asking for help, prioritizing the to-do list. And also if you're able to like get help as well, like even if it's like one day a week, if you can have someone come and like clean the house, or somebody like, you know, watch your kids for a few hours, if your parents can come by, if your brother or your sister, anybody can help, just like even once a week, just to, you know, give yourself a break as well.
I think that's really helpful, really practical advice. I'm wondering if you ever say this to clients and they, especially when it comes to like asking your spouse directly for advice. Do you ever hear from women like, why should I have to ask them? They should know. Because I know that this was something that I struggled with a lot in the beginning of my marriage, and we definitely got better at it. And my husband's probably better at communication than I am. And he was like, you know, I'll do anything to help you. You just have to ask. I feel like a lot of men say that. The good men, they want to help. They're just like, just tell me what to do. And I think a lot of women also are like, I don't want to tell you what to do. Like, why am I the master planner of all the birthday parties and the meals and the outfits and like knowing who needs new clothes and all like all these random things that it's more than just like delegating and telling. But I know it's funny. Like, I remember when, I think it was when I was pregnant, one of my friends told me, and it was one of the best pieces of advice I ever got, was like, the best thing you will be able to do as a mom is learn how to ask for help and learn how to really receive it. And I know a lot of people will like give these offers and women will be like, oh, no, it's fine. Like, I got it. You know, if someone's like, oh, can I help with anything? Or like, do you want me to drop off dinner? Or I could help pick up the kids or something. They're like, no, it's fine. I can do it. But just because you can doesn't mean you have to. Like, if you have people really offering to help, to really take them up on it. But any advice for people who might be like, I don't want to have to ask for help. I just kind of feel like other people should step in or be able to do those things.
Yeah. So this is a big topic that has come up with my own marriage and just clients in general. And I, on the one hand, I do agree, like we shouldn't have to ask, but our partners are not mind readers. And so that's something that I have to remind myself more often than not. And it's something that my husband and I actually learned in couples therapy. And it was like the best piece of advice that we've ever gotten is, instead of making assumptions, ask, right? And so for me, thinking like, you should know to just unload the dishwasher, like, maybe he should know to unload the dishwasher, but it takes like 1 second for me to just say, hey, can you unload the dishwasher, versus like holding that resentment inside and it blowing up into this like 3-day thing where I'm like, why didn't he just unload the dishwasher? So I assumed and I didn't ask. So I would say that's number one. Another thing that I love that to tell clients is, I was recently listening to this podcast with Emily Oster. She's amazing. And she had Eve Rodsky on her podcast, and she writes a book called Fair Play. And what she talks about is that she was married for 10 years and she had like 3 kids, and she was feeling in that like resentment phase of like, why am I always doing everything? And so her and her husband actually came up with this like brilliant idea where they took cards, like index cards, and they wrote out all of the tasks that need to get done in the house every single week. So they wrote like, you know, stocking the fridge, making the doctor's appointments, you know, carpool, any possible thing, paying the bills, like paying the auto insurance, anything. And what they do at the beginning of each week is they take all the cards and they divvy them up based on like each other's schedule. So if 1 week her husband had like a work trip, she would take more of the cards than he did, and vice versa. And it doesn't have to be this like 50-50 thing at all. It's more of just like you're giving your spouse these specific tasks and you're delegating, and like they're in charge of the cards for the week, and you can just sort of relinquish that control and let them do what they have to do on their own time.
I said, whoa, because I'm like, there's so many things to do. And my husband and I also just talk about that a lot. Like, we met really young. I feel like we met as kids and we're just like, we look at each other all the time. We're like, oh my God, we're adults. Like, there's so many things we have to do that are not fun and be responsible for like the small humans who lived here. And it's like a lot of work. And sometimes I feel like women get into this loop where they're also then keeping score with like, I'm doing all these things and he's, you know, doing whatever he's doing, or he's not doing as much as I'm doing. So like, okay, yeah, I asked him to take out the garbage and he did, but like, I'm also doing these 900,000 other things. And there's almost this underlying game that they're playing in their head or competition that like, I'm always the mom and I'm always doing more. And another thing that I noticed for myself for sure, and I'm sure I'm not the only one, is that I'm a little bit of a control freak. So I could ask my husband to go to the supermarket and make the list and plan dinners, but like, he'll do it wrong. He'll get the wrong cucumbers. He'll do the wrong dinner. And is that something also that you see coming up a lot with women? Like, it's not just that they're not delegating. It's that they're like, well, if I would, they wouldn't do it as well as I would like.
Absolutely. And that's why I said the part of like relinquishing control, because I do it in my own marriage and all of my clients tell me this. If we delegate to our partners, we have to sort of take a step back and be like, they might not get the right cucumbers and they might not make the right dinner and they might put the diaper on backwards and they might forget to pack X. But in order for them to do things, we have to sort of relinquish that control and just praise them and say like, thank you for packing the diaper bag, or thank you for going to the supermarket and getting the cucumbers. And at the end of the day, like, you have to think like, are you going to be okay if he gets the wrong cucumbers? But at least it saved you like an hour trip to the grocery store. And so really thinking about that and relinquishing that control. And I agree. I think as moms, like, we're superheroes. We do a lot of things better than our spouses, but that's not really the point, right? It's not the scorecard. It's more just like giving us a break. So if like, personally, I would be okay with him getting the wrong cucumbers if it saved me like 2 hours of thinking about prepping dinner. And so like, he got Persian cucumbers instead of regular cucumbers. Like, the world is not going to end, right?
Right.
And I just saved 2 hours of my own time. So thinking about it in terms of that way. And I also, something also like really helpful is that a lot of men, like, they don't respond well to criticism, and they respond better to like, thank you so much for going to the grocery store, instead of like, oh my God, I sent you there and you got the wrong cucumbers and this is such a waste of time. I could have done it better myself. You can think all those things and you're probably right for sure. But just saying like, thank you so much for going, it definitely like helps them want to do it again for the next time. And like, just like we talk to our kids and we give them like positive praise, it's the same kind of thing when you speak to other people and to speak like speaking to your spouse. It's just, thank you for doing that. And like, in your mind, you can think like, yeah, I probably would have done it better, but at least I didn't have to put it on my to-do list for the day.
No, for sure. Listen, I think all of us respond better to gratitude as opposed to criticism. And it sounds funny and like very obvious when you say it, but I'm sure most people can think of times where they were like, oh my God, seriously, that's what you did. Or like, I asked you to do it this way and you did it that way. But I think that's a really good reminder for a lot of us. And I know personally, this is something that my husband and I both actually really like to prioritize exercise. And it's not just a physical thing. It's like really for our mental health. And there's so many days where, for whatever reason, our kids are just not in daycare. Unfortunately, they're supposed to be in daycare full time. And, you know, a holiday, the day before a holiday, the day after a holiday, like a random Wednesday, they just don't seem to be in gone. They get their viruses, whatever. And when we're both like dealing with kids being at home or trying to take turns both working, we will say to each other like, okay, I need to go exercise because I need that for my mental health. And the other one will usually be like, okay, great, go do it. And then the other one comes back and is like, thank you so much. And you see, like, I'm a different person after I've done yoga. My husband's a different person after he goes running. And I think that's a really good reminder of what you're saying. Like, when you get back those 2 hours, also, what are you doing with those 2 hours? Are you like sitting and being anxious and scrolling on your phone? Or are you saying like, let me take that time to do something for myself?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that also goes back to what we were saying before of like, you know, even those 10 minutes of prioritizing your mental health, like you can see a significant change in your mood just by taking, pausing for 10, 15 minutes a day. Just like you said, you needed your run or you needed your yoga. Like when you prioritize self-care and putting yourself first, it becomes like a natural habit, and the differences in your like mood and your overall well-being are so dramatic that like, you're not going to think like, oh, I just wasted 10 minutes like drinking my coffee. No, it's like I'm prioritizing my mental health and I need those 10 minutes in order to function, in order to show up and be the best mom and wife and, you know, partner and like career woman that I can be.
Totally. I mean, I've almost never regretted slowing down and taking time to just be present. I really haven't. I've regretted putting too much on my calendar and putting too much pressure on myself to do certain things, but I've never really regretted taking that time for myself. So I think that's a really good point. And I want to, you know, you mentioned so many different tools that can be helpful in terms of self-care and taking time for yourself. One tool that I know a lot of people turn to is medication. And I'm curious to hear your thoughts on how medication can be used or if it should be used to support, you know, moms or especially like in the prenatal postpartum period, and how that, you know, also like compares with some of these other more, I don't know if natural is the right word, but like non-medication types of tools that can support mental health.
Sure. So when I see a mom for the first time, like I usually recommend more of like the natural approach right away, unless there's like some sort of significant distressor or like they're really not functioning, then I would recommend right away for them to see a psychiatrist. But if they're just like in that phase of like, I'm super overwhelmed and I'm anxious all the time, and you know, there's so much to do, we do try to use like talk therapy as well as different like therapy options like CBT, which is cognitive behavioral therapy, which is really helpful for anxiety, and some DBT skills, which is dialectical behavioral therapy. And that's also really helpful. And I also tell them to prioritize, like, I'm a big believer in like sleep. Getting adequate sleep is everything for your mental health. Eating right, like eating healthy, exercising, whether it's taking walks. And that's something that I prioritize every day, or, you know, finding that form of exercise that you enjoy doing. So whether it's yoga or Pilates or running or, you know, spinning, whatever you enjoy doing. And I also teach my clients a lot of mindfulness techniques. So that's like breathing and meditation and grounding exercises. And so we try all of those things first. And if those things are not significantly helping after, I would say, like maybe six sessions or so, well, to have the conversation about medication. Personally, I think medication can be super helpful in conjunction with therapy. For anxiety, it actually is like the gold standard to take medication and do talk therapy together with CBT. So if my client comes in and they, you know, they want to talk about medication, I'm very open to it and I encourage them to do it. But we also try like some of the natural things alongside the medication. And those are always the clients that do the best, I would say. I think medication has this bad rep, and I think that we need to kind of take a step back and sort of look at it as though when somebody is struggling with anxiety or depression, there are chemical imbalances in their brain. Like that's just science. And so sometimes they just need medication to help them. And it's not abnormal. It's not, doesn't mean they're bad. There shouldn't be any like stigma with that. And I explain it to my clients as though like you had strep throat, right? Like you would take antibiotics because you want to get rid of the infection. And so if you're really struggling with anxiety and to the point where it's impacting your daily functioning and all of these like other treatment options are not working for you, then I would say I definitely recommend doing medication. And my clients that are on anti-anxiety medication or anti-depression medication are doing really, really well. And there definitely are side effects with every medication. There are side effects. And so we talk about those, and that's not really my role because I'm more of the therapist, but we also do things in conjunction, like I said. And so those people see the most success.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I'm wondering, are there some people who kind of need the support of the medication before they could even get to the tools? Like it does take some energy to say, hey, I'm going to go start exercising consistently or start trying to eat healthy. Like I know some people who are really struggling to get out of bed, like they might not even be able to utilize those kinds of tools? Because you kind of have to be in a little bit of a better state, from my understanding, to be able to do that. Is that right?
Correct. That's absolutely correct. So for example, and I'll give you a personal example. So after I had, a pregnancy loss and I went through that like postpartum depression period, I tried to do all of those things because, you know, that's my job. So it almost felt like, why can't I get out of bed and do the mindfulness? Why can't I practice my yoga? And so I actually started taking anti-anxiety medication, and it was
wow,
life-changing for me. And it was great. And I stayed on it through my third pregnancy. And I'm still on it now, but I think it's exactly what you're saying. If a client can't even get to the point where they're motivated to exercise, or they just can't sleep because their anxiety is so prominent and they can't fall asleep, or sometimes they fall asleep and they have trouble staying asleep because the anxious thoughts come, that's when we need to turn to medication, because they won't be able to do the more natural things without that assistance of the medication and like fixing the chemical imbalance in their brain. So it's exactly as you said it. If they can't, you know, do the things naturally, and they're lacking that more motivation, that's where we recommend medication.
Yeah, it makes sense. To me, it almost sounds like a step stool of like, let's say you're just struggling to even reach that first step. It's like, here's a step stool to get you to those steps. And then, you know, I'm just a big believer in like, everybody should make informed choices and do what works for them. And if something is working for you, you know, that's great. I actually was on anxiety medication at one point and I hated how I felt on it. And I didn't feel like there were chemical imbalances in my brain. I felt like I needed better coping skills. And I see really clearly that like my physical health is very connected to my mental health. But in pregnancy, it was actually something that I really considered, because that was a point where I felt like nothing's wrong, at least in my second pregnancy. Like I didn't have any of the high risk stuff. I knew already that my body was capable of bringing a healthy baby into the world. And I almost felt like, I explained it to my friend as like, I'm stuck inside this body that's experiencing anxiety, but I'm not anxious. Like Lauren's not an anxious person, but like the body's experiencing a lot of anxiety and it doesn't feel like mine. It almost feels like I'm inside watching a storm outside of the window, but I'm like stuck in this room and watching the storm outside. It was like a very weird experience, because I was like, I feel it. And I'd have all these weird experiences. Like I remember I called my husband one day and I was like, I am having these like, okay, this sounds crazy, not visions, but like I keep having these, you know, things replay in my head of like you and my daughter getting in a car accident. And I need you to just tell me like you're at work and you're okay. He's like, what are you talking about? Like, of course we're okay. I was like, I don't know. I'm feeling sad, like as if God forbid something happened to you. And I'm like replaying these weird scenarios in my head where like something really bad happened. You got in a car accident. Like I can't stop thinking about it. And it wasn't true. And I was like, why am I doing this? And it was whatever. I was like very, very nervous and wanted to just kind of like stay to the more natural holistic side when I was in pregnancy. Like I know also that's a whole separate conversation about being on medication in pregnancy, but it was something that like I was willing to consider, because I was like, if I don't, you know, see help from getting professional support in terms of like therapy and other stuff, I definitely would have considered it, because it was very scary. It was very overwhelming.
Yeah, it sounds like you definitely experienced like perinatal anxiety disorder. And it's like that worst case scenario thinking of like something bad is going to happen. And when those thoughts like take over is like a time when I would recommend like either like thinking about medication or just having the conversation and exactly being informed on like the side effects. And, you know, some medications work better for other people and some people have different side effects, and sometimes you have to find the right dose. And I think what's hard with medication is that it's not like a magic pill, and some people think it is.
Yeah.
You know, I have a client now that's like, oh, I took my antidepressants for 3 days. Like, why am I not better? And I'm trying to explain to her that like, it can take up to 6 weeks to see any sort of improvement. So You have to also be patient with medication and understand that, you know, things can take time and your body to like re-regulate itself and the hormones to balance. And so that's just something to keep in mind as well.
Yeah, it's definitely, I think it's really good that we're talking about it, because I know people are more open about it and open about their experiences, but I think a lot of people don't really get into the nitty gritty of their experiences on medication or like considering, you know, listen, I'll be totally honest. There was a part of me, I remember speaking to a friend she's technically not a practicing therapist yet. She's getting her PhD in psychology. And there was a part of me that was like, I feel like maybe I should go on it, but it like kind of goes against my whole holistic vibe. And like, I don't know, and I'm doing fine enough without it. And there were like different periods where I felt more or less fine. And I was also like, if it's anything like my last pregnancy, it'll be over the second the pregnancy ends. And it was. So there was, you know, I don't know that I necessarily like regret it, but it's interesting. And I think it's just important for women to know that there are all these different tools and options when you're struggling with your mental health at all these stages, because it's, you know, it's really common, but there are tools that could help support you.
Absolutely. And I think just to share with like the listeners that there is a website called PSI, which is Postpartum Support International. And they have incredible resources, all free for women, you know, in the perinatal and postpartum stages. And so they have like, you know, support groups, and they have like a crisis text line sort of thing to text into, and they have a hotline to call, and they have all different like practices that you can do, like mindfulness techniques and things like that. So I would definitely recommend people to check that out, because I found it super helpful, and a lot of my clients find it helpful as well.
No, that's great. I love giving people like very specific directions to resources and kind of tapping into that. You mentioned support groups. I feel like something that's been extremely helpful for my own mental health as a mom has been having support from other moms. I'm really lucky. I feel like I have just very, very good friends. I don't know what I did in this life to deserve the friends that I have, but I have really good friends, like the kind that you could vent to and that are non-judgmental and are just like really going out of their way to check up on me. And I feel like, especially since I became a mom, leaning into my mom friends has been like the thing that when I'm having a really hard day or my kids throw tantrums and I just feel like everything is the worst, I know exactly who to text who's going to make me feel better right away. Is that something at all that you see? Like, I don't know if you do support groups for moms struggling or like in general, just seeing how peer support or like family support can help with maternal mental health.
Yeah, peer support is phenomenal. And it's exactly what you're saying. I do the exact same thing, right? Like only someone that's been through a situation can fully understand it. And that's something that I'm like a big believer in. So, you know, I think like turning to people that are in the motherhood stage and they're going through similar struggles, like at least for me and for a bunch of my clients, it makes us feel less alone. And like that, like what we're going through is not abnormal. And what we're going through is like typical motherhood stuff. And so I think support groups are a really good resource. I don't run a personal support group, but I do run like a social skills support group. And even though it's like a different topic, the kids that I work with and they're teenagers, they say that like being in the presence of someone else that's going through something similar to you is just like this eye-opening experience where you're like, wow, it's not just me. Mm-hmm. Other people are going through this and it's not something wrong with me. It's not abnormal. And so I think peer support is another great resource, and just like opening up to friends. And something that really resonates with me is like somebody once told me, actually after I went through a pregnancy loss, they said to me, you know, your friends can't be there for you if they don't know what you're going through. And so it sounds like really simple, but it definitely like opened my eyes and made me a much more open and like vulnerable person and sharing like what's going on. Because in order to get support, your friends or your family have to know like the struggles that you're having. And so another thing that I'm like very passionate about is like answering honestly and openly when somebody says like, how are you doing? And so it doesn't always have to be like, good, how are you? Because like, let's be honest with ourselves. A lot of us are not great right now. The world is a crazy place. Like there's so much going on. And so giving this space and like to answer honestly and say like, you know, actually like I'm having a really hard day, and that opens up a conversation. And so the other person can say like, oh, why don't you tell me about it? Or, you know, just giving that support. And so I think just being open with, you know, our friends and just being vulnerable and telling it like it is definitely another great resource. And like just getting that support from one another, especially people that are going through similar things.
Yeah, I think that's a really good tip. That's hard. And I know people are not going to see my face, but I'm like kind of blushing and laughing as you said that, because I'm always like, yeah, it's good, it's fine, whatever. I think there's also, you know, you have to be selective with who you're going to open up and be vulnerable to. But I definitely think that like sharing more with your friends about the struggles, I know that that's something that I've seen a lot because I definitely don't feel like I hide the chaos of toddlerhood. And I'm always sharing stories with my friends and stuff. But sometimes I'll like share something with a client who I know is struggling. They're like, oh my God, I would have never thought, you seem like you have it all together and you're so organized because of how you share things on like social media. I was like, well, that's not that it's fake, but like there's a very small selection of my life of what I'm sharing on social media. And I also choose not to ever share my kids for real on social media because I just don't think it's safe. So like, I'll never whip out my phone when they're having tantrums, but like my daughter and son were both literally crying and screaming in the supermarket tonight when I went to pick up food before this interview. And my daughter slapped me in the face. Like, I'm not joking. And I lost it. I was like, we do not hit mommy. And this was like in the supermarket. And someone's like trying to squeeze past me and being like, can you please move your stroller? And I was like, can you please move your car? Like, it was not my best mom moment. But I'm not like, I'm not going to start videoing myself doing that and post it on social media. But I know when I've shared that with friends or like even with clients, they're like, oh my God, wait, you've lost it on your kids. And there's something that makes us, I think, all feel like, oh, wow, you know, other moms are going through it too. And I'm not alone in this. And that is really, really powerful for people.
Yeah. And it just like all goes back to like sharing that human experience. And like, these are things that we all struggle with, right? Like everyone's kids have tantrums. Everyone loses it sometimes at their kids. And this is all part of like normal motherhood stuff. And so sharing definitely helps you feel like you're not alone and you're part of this like larger motherhood community.
Mm-hmm. I was actually talking about something with my husband today that I wanted to ask you about, that I feel, especially like we struggled to get pregnant and building our family did not come easily. And I'm so grateful for my kids. They're everything. I love them with my whole heart. And at the same time, even with everything that we went through, I said, like, there is sometimes a part of me that misses who I was before I became a mother, who was just like a little bit more carefree. And we would go traveling together, just me and my husband, even though like on those trips, I was usually crying about struggling with infertility. There's still these like periods that I go through or thought loops that I'll get in of like, oh, but remember who I was before that? Or when I used to just like go out with friends. I recently went out with a group of my friends who were all also moms. And like, we all texted in the group chat. It was so great to get out. And also like none of our kids slept that night and we went out late, but our kids were all up early and we were just like, I can't believe this is our lives. Like, we get woken up at 5 a.m. whether we like it or not. And do you see that also being something that like moms are missing a part of who they were before, kind of lose touch with who they were before motherhood? And, you know, maybe that playing a role in any of this?
Definitely. And I like to say that like, I like to look at myself as Gabrielle and not just like Gabrielle the mom and Gabrielle the wife. Like, who is Gabrielle and what does Gabrielle need and want in her own life? And that's exactly goes back to like the prioritizing me time and to thinking of myself of like, these are the 10 minutes. What does Gabrielle need in these 10 minutes? Not what does like she need as a mother or as a wife or as a therapist or as, you know, a daughter and a sister, all that kind of stuff. And I think that that's something that a lot of us struggle with. It's like finding your own identity and not just as a mom. And also what you said before, Lauren, is like, that's like something that's really, really powerful and like holding two conflicting emotions at the same time. And it's called like dialectical emotions. And it's basically like, you can feel super, super grateful for these kids that were not so easy to get to, but also miss your days when you didn't have kids and when they were more carefree and when you could just pick up and go on a trip. And those can be true at the same time. And just like noticing that and just knowing that like it's normal to have conflicting feelings. And obviously like we wouldn't trade our kids in for the world and we're super grateful for them, but there are going to be times when we're like, this job is so hard. Being a mom is so, so hard.
Yeah.
And I think just even having this conversation hopefully will help other moms know that like what they're going through is normal. And like I always say, women are warriors. We're superheroes. We do a lot. And, you know, we need to prioritize ourselves at the end of the day.
I really love that. Also, even what you just said about like, I'm not just someone's mom. I mean, there are many people who have me in their contact in their phone as Eden's mom. Like, they don't know my name. When I pick my kids up from daycare, they actually don't know my name. They just call me either Eden's mom or Rafael's mom. Oh, she's here. Like, give Rafael's mom the stuff. And it's so easy to lose that identity. I know, like, one thing, which I know we're running out of time, I didn't even get to speak to, is like the lack of maternity leave that I think contributes to a lot of moms' poor mental health, especially postpartum. But I know for me, like, I jumped back into work pretty quickly after having a baby, precisely because I felt like it gave me the identity outside of being a newborn mom. And I really felt like that helped me feel like myself, even though I also need to work on finding my identity outside of work and outside of just being a mom and outside of all these things. But I did. I felt more like myself when I could, like, you know, be helpful and productive and, you know, think of like fun, creative ways to help women optimize their own health and all this stuff. And I noticed that was really important for me. But I think a lot of moms who maybe don't have an outlet of like a job that they love or, you know, maybe don't have the strongest social network, it's really easy to fall into like, I'm just this person's mom, or not just, because it's amazing and it's a huge deal. But then, you know, after that's happening for a couple of years, you really can lose your sense of self pretty quickly. So I think that, you know, taking 10 minutes for yourself here and there, not here and there, every day, can really help strengthen that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I totally agree. I went to work back to work after this, my third son, after 4 weeks, because precisely wow. for that reason, because I stayed home with my first son, like for 2 years, it was COVID and it was a whole thing. And I definitely felt what you said before. I was just Noah's mom. I wasn't like, who is Gabrielle? I completely lost myself. And, you know, after having my third son, I didn't feel like just Avery's mom. Like, I felt like Gabrielle the therapist and Gabrielle the friend and Gabrielle and I like the wife, and I prioritized all those other outlets. And I think even if you don't have a job, you can still prioritize like doing things for yourself, whether it's like meeting up with friends or going for a walk or taking up a hobby that you really like, or, you know, doing something for fun at home. Like, it doesn't necessarily have to be career-wise, but just knowing like who you are besides for being a mom is like something that could be really helpful in all this as well.
Yeah, I love that. I feel like for me, I find a lot of that clarity either in meditation or in journaling, because like you're just really with yourself in those moments. But I think that's so helpful for women. And I think in general, this conversation was super helpful. Thank you for just sharing, first of all, your own personal experience with all of this, but then also as a therapist and having worked with so many women throughout these stages of life. This was really so great. Thank you so much. And can you tell everyone where they could find you?
Sure. First of all, thank you for having me, Lauren. This was so fun for me as well. And I hope it was informative for our listeners. You can follow me on Instagram at The Chef Therapist. It's where I, you know, give resources and tips and just talk about mom life in general. And so I look forward to seeing everyone there.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for listening to the About Health and Hormones podcast. If you loved today's episode, I would love to know. Please leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify so I can make this podcast even better for you all. I would love to connect with you. Follow me on Instagram at Lauren Allen Nutrition, or head to my website, www.laurenallennutrition.com, to learn about my coaching programs and stay up to date on all of my latest workshops and courses. I am so glad you are here today, and I wish you all health and happiness.